You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 7th of January. Oh, how nice it is to play Eastern Conference teams. And a big one today, plus happy projections from one Kevin Pelton. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers. And if you got one of those cool little smart speakers around your house for Christmas or the holidays, you can tell it to play the podcast, Locked On Jazz. Hope you're doing great today. Rainy, stormy Milwaukee. I've got a big American flag blowing back and forth outside my window with rain coming down my windows and a little bit of a loud night with the wind and rain here in Milwaukee. So the storm has hit. I hear there's awesome powder in Utah. If any of you'd like to save a spot for me or two for Tuesday, I'd greatly appreciate it. Just let me know where it is. Well, here's what we got on the program today. We're going to review two games. And kind of talk about how the Jazz played and what they do. And we'll go back to a little bit of our game review that we've always done over the years, or the last few years. And Kevin Pelton wrote a piece about the Jazz and teams that are most likely to have a strong second half of the season. So we'll take a look at that for you today. And we'll welcome a new client in Iron Gate Financial. All right, all of that coming up for you on today's program, and we'll look at the Bucks. I think I said that. All right, so win in Cleveland was really incredibly easy, and win in Detroit. And Cleveland had all of our ires up. This was the game we were supposed to just walk through, and then at halftime we hadn't walked through it, and it suddenly felt like something could be dramatically wrong, and by the end of the night, you know, the Jazz won by 26. We're back up by 30. Jazz have had one of the highest number of 20-point leads and 15-point leads of teams in the season this year. Milwaukee's the highest in both, who we play tonight. And then it's really the teams you'd expect. It tells you where the Jazz actually sit with the better teams in the league. Golden State, Toronto, Milwaukee, then Philadelphia, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and Utah are the teams that have had the most 15- and 20-point leads in a season. I don't know it's a great indicator, but it's fairly good and tells you a little something. And in turn, the Jazz went and blew out Cleveland after a really poor start in the first and third quarter from the starting unit and then ran away with it. Turned out by the end of the night exactly what you'd expect, our fourth best offensive night. And this is where, and I know I've harped on it and I haven't let it go. And for some of you out there, it's hard to swallow. But I guess I'm not getting off my island or my top of my mountaintop. I would suggest that those of you out there that have tried to say, well, the schedule doesn't matter and the team, you know, like, it's almost all that matters. You know, we're not a great offensive team. We've had offensive struggles. We also have now played, you know, again, the worst off defensive teams in the league. We hadn't played very much. So now all of a sudden we play Cleveland, one of the worst teams in the league. We have our fourth best offensive night. We play the Knicks. We have our second best offensive night of the year. And it's not surprising that you suddenly play the lesser teams and you have better offensive nights. What was going on? We were getting good looks. We were either rushed or just, you know, you're playing from behind or you're playing under tough conditions or whatever it might be. And you don't make all of those shots because you're playing better teams. Like the team we're playing tonight is incredible and will cause us to miss a lot of shots probably and have a hard time with some things with their length and the fact that they rotate better and all sorts of things. But the Jazz put out there, as you would anticipate, playing a not very good team in the Cleveland Cavaliers. They put out their fourth best offensive night of the year. By the end of the night, they shot, you know, 60% effective field goal percentage and 51% from the field and 40% from three. And, you know, what's interesting is we this stat I used early in the year to talk to you guys was QSQ. And QSQ is quantified shot quality. It tells you the likelihood of any shot going in if the average player in the NBA gets that shot. Now, there's another level on this stat where they then judge it based a little bit on QSP, which is who gets the shot, right? And what the value of that is. So there's other levels you can look at it, but this is just, you know, is your offense getting you looks? Early in the year, we were by far the worst team in the league in our ability to make those shots. Or we were down near the bottom. We have now moved up a little bit. Now we're 24th in the league instead of 29th. It's still not great. But with a not great shooting team, it's really important that our offense runs correctly and that we get those high-quality shots. So if you, I thought it was interesting if we go back and take a second and look at both the Detroit and the Cleveland game in that regard. So, you know, if you look at Utah against Cleveland, and what's the quality of shots that we got in that game? And you look at Utah against Detroit, and what's the quality, and how did we do? All right, so we're playing a little less good teams. So against Cleveland, we had our shot quality was so much better. Our shot quality was, if average players taking 56% effective field goal percentage, theirs was 48. Like, it's not even close. And then we shot against Cleveland, a team that probably is not as good defensively, doesn't disrupt you as much, we shot 3.7 points above our regular average, or what our average was. So we had a really good shooting night. And I do think the fact that, you know, it's a little bit why I do think when we have a good defensive day, it's just not that we got lucky. You're disrupting people, you're making them take shots they shouldn't have. Against Detroit, same thing. Our shot quality was 54.4. Theirs was 49.5, so way better. They end up having a very, very good shooting night, have a better effective field goal percentage than we do, and we were a minus 2.5 against Detroit. But because we're taking such good shots and our system gets us into the right spots, we actually ended up winning that game just from the starting point of where our offense is. That was not a great offensive night for us. It was our 19th best offensive game of the year and our 21st best defensive game of the year overall. So Detroit coming on the back-to-back, not totally stunning, and a terrible start. We did not look as good. Now, I thought the really good thing about that game is I thought, and Quinn talked about this post-game, we just kind of had a will to win. And that's really, you know, it's not to say you didn't have a will to win in your other games, but there was something to that one where we were just down. Things went wrong. Donovan didn't start well. Dante got hurt. Tabo got hurt. You were down 18. It was the largest comeback of the season. First time we'd come back from more than 15 since opening night against Sacramento. And Sacramento and Detroit are probably similar, and the Jazz just kind of should beat those teams and did that. And it was an interesting kind of thing to see the Jazz execute, and then late they came back with a little challenge. I thought there was a great deal of focus. There were really good possessions. I thought there was little less of – there have been some times this year where I felt like guys have tried to hit their home runs and have their moments, trying to find their oats of where they fit in this season. I didn't see any of that. Jay Crowder was 1 of 8 against Detroit, and I thought had a huge impact on the game, which I kind of love when those kind of days happen where you're not hitting your shot, you have an impact. And then Donovan was just marvelous. Donovan returned to Donovan, 24 points, super aggressive, and it's such an interesting conversation about what is fair to ask out of Donovan. And this weekend was a great example of just what an impossible request we're having on Donovan and upon and who he is as a player. We'll talk about that coming up in a second. Jazz go 2-0 against the two lesser teams. We'll talk a little bit about Kevin Pelton's point, a crazy scheduling note, and preview for the Bucks. But we welcome in a brand new sponsor to Locked On Jazz. I'd like to introduce you to Iron Gate Global Advisors Financial Group out of Salt Lake City. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, great basketball player. And beyond his jump shot, he's got an MBA. He's worked in private equity. He's got experience working in Wall Street, accounting and financing degrees. And he's now working with Iron Gate Financial. And here's why.
As I evaluated my options and looked at different firms, it became clear to me that the real question I needed to ask was, who would I trust managing my portfolio? And as I got to know Brett and I got to know Brian, I was able to see how they differentiate themselves from so many other wealth management firms and the real value that they create. And it was clear to me that I wanted to work with them.
Brian's a long-term financial expert. Brett, who's been in the business forever, has got an options background. They have a strategy, a direction, and a process. And most importantly, as a small firm, they understand your journey. If you'd like to find out more about Iron Gate, give Spencer a call at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334 or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. Thanks to Spencer Nelson and the crew over at Lionsgate. All right, let's talk about Donovan for a second. I thought this was really, really interesting on our halftime and our post-game show the other night. So we're in Cleveland trailing at the half by one, and Britton Johnson says Donovan's got to be more assertive. And I think to myself, wow, I just did Locked On Jazz on Friday. I did an entire show about how terribly inefficient Donovan is. And basically saying at some point you have to, you know, be honest about how inefficient he really is. That was kind of my point, right? Like, he was one of the least efficient players in the league over the last 10 games. He's one of the five least efficient players. He's having a negative impact on your team offensively. And, like, let's be honest about it. Like, it is what it is. He's got great character. He's got great fortitude. He's learning the game. He's got a burden that's overwhelming. It's not, like, don't quit on him. Don't decide he's not good. But let's be honest about what's actually taking place. And then understanding that Donovan is this incredible person, and his work ethic is high, and his desire to be great is high, he'll work through it. And so now we say these so I've said this. I think I'm right. Britton has said what he has to say. I think he's probably right. And the Jazz go play the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Donovan on that night just doesn't necessarily assert himself. He plays really smart. He plays incredibly efficient. And, you know, he has this great game and everyone praises him. We have eight players in double figures. But, like, that's against Cleveland. And Cleveland's terrible. I mean, like, seriously terrible. One of the worst teams we've ever seen. And, you know, it's great that he had that night. But is that actually my point afterwards was, is that actually realistic? In some ways, if Donovan was super selfish and wanted to only worry about his shoe deal and his critics and everything about him, that's what he would do every night. Like, screw the team. I'm not taking 20 shots. I'm taking my 15. I'm only taking them when I'm wide open. I'm only going to help my percentages. I'm tired of listening to how inefficient I am from jerks like Locke. And, you know, that's an answer. And yet, on the other end, Britton's saying it's got to be more assertive. I don't even know what's right. But I thought it was fascinating, the contrast between, within 24 hours, the two things that were being said. And I actually think both are right. I think he's got to be more efficient, and I think he's got an incredible burden to carry this team. And so Britton's right that he's got to be more assertive. It's pretty hard to do both of those. In fact, it's impossible. And it's a great example of how crazy it is what we're asking out of Donovan Mitchell. And then in the first half in Detroit, he's just not good. He's 1 of 5. He has a bad open in the quarter. He gets taken out of the game. I say on the broadcast to Ron, I'm really curious to see how he reacts. Like, is he just going to go preserve himself and be efficient? Is he going to try to will the team to a win? Is he going to try to take over? Like, what's he going to do? And he hadn't really taken over a game in that fashion in a while. And he went and took over. He had 24 second half points. He was absolutely marvelous. And he willed, played 38 minutes, and he willed the Jazz to the win. I don't think he checked out after he got taken out early in that fourth quarter. And absolutely willed the Jazz with a brilliant, brilliant performance to a win. Now that's being assertive. And the night before we'd complimented him on being, right? It's just, I don't know. I don't think there's an, I think this is the essence of why this is so hard for Donovan. I just don't think there's actually a good answer there. And it's probably worth our just stopping and completely understanding at all times that that's how crazy each and every night is for him with the burden upon him with no experience doing it. And then couple the fact that his amount of games that he's been the go-to guy of a team. Remember, halfway through his sophomore year at Louisville, he's benched. So he's the go-to guy at Louisville for like their last 10, 15 games. And now for 100 and, you know, he probably wasn't our go-to guy the first games of the year. For 100 games of his NBA career, it's all new. So we let him, you know, so he's got to, we got to understand a little bit of what he's going through in this process. The Jazz will play their 41st game of the year tonight. Okay. I know everybody's tired of schedule talk, but this, I mean, I've said that I think, and I said this to David and PK on Friday, and I think I've said this, I think, you know, the schedule burden is over. So, like, the time in which the schedule was just ridiculous, like, I feel fine today. Like, I have felt worse at times this season than, you know, just the burden. We were tired going on road trips. Like, the fatigue on this trip has been non-issue. Easy flights. I mean, it's so different in the East Coast. It's a 35-minute flight from one place to the next. 40-minute flight. We're in at midnight. You're bed by 12:30. You're up at 7 or 8, depending on what you want to be. I've gotten more sleep here than I get at home. It's great. So it's not. The fatigue is over. But let's just, today's a great day at 41 games to take a look at what we've done. So today will be our 41st game. We will play our 25th road game to 16 home games. A differential of 9. That's almost impossible to do in a schedule. Had we had an appropriately balanced schedule, we would have played 4 more home games. I don't know if that sounds like a lot to you or not. That's 10% of your games. That's a tremendous amount because it's also 5 plane flights. And we'd still be off 1, by the way, if we'd played 4 more. If we played 5 more, we'd be 21-20. There are 20 games in which we are supposed to play this year against the lesser 9 teams in the league. 8 Eastern Conference teams twice, 16, the Phoenix Suns 4 times, 20. We've played 4. If we had had an appropriately balanced schedule, we would have played 6 more games against those teams than against the teams that we played. We would have probably won all 6 or 5 of the 6. We probably went 3-3 instead since we're 500. So you can add 2 or 3 wins there. Then you can go decide what you think of the 4 road games becoming home games and the lack of travel and fatigue and decide how many more wins you want to add on. And had we had a normal schedule, there would not have been nearly the haranguing and the complaining about this team and, frankly, about Donovan. The storyline of this team would be so dramatically different, it's stunning. We're 20-20, not to mention that Donovan has missed four games and not finished two others, in which I think we're either 0-6 or 1-5. The storyline, the commenting, the reaction would be so incredibly different. And equally to that, the internal feeling about the team and about each other would be different. Like, we are in such a good mood right now. Winning just makes you feel better. Playing well and losing does not. Coaches can try, but it doesn't really work. And what's interesting is, I don't know that we played better against Cleveland than we did against Toronto. I'm pretty certain we didn't play better against Detroit than we did against Toronto. And yet, you feel so different. It's an incredible phenomenon. The other one that I would say, and Dennis Lindsay and the front office deserve a tremendous amount of credit for this. I'm surprised considering how many events happen in this league. Jimmy Butler against Brett Brown the other day. Omari Caspi and Garrett Temple getting into it in Memphis the other day. That we haven't had in a moment. And if we have, I've missed it. Because, honestly, we were on the road so much and so tired and so frustrated and losing. I'm really stunned that the group didn't have a huge blow-up. Whether, frankly, amongst coaches, there's nine coaches, you're all just as tired, you're working your ass off. You know, amongst players with the pressure, I'm stunned. I'm super impressed by it. Kevin Pelton is very optimistic about what happens to the Utah Jazz next. We'll touch on that. Plus, look at the Milwaukee Bucks as we continue on this edition of Locked On Jazz. If you got a smart speaker for the holidays, you can tell it to play podcast Locked On Jazz. If you have the Audio League Pass, you can also get the Audio League Pass, activate the NBA skill, and tell it to play Utah Jazz basketball and listen to our radio calls on the smart speaker. Kevin Pelton wrote an article this weekend, probably based off of, I mean, off his knowledge, but off a little bit building off what I just said. The teams that should have better results in 2019, and he had the Utah Jazz, who are currently 19-20, and he had us projected BPI to go 47 or 538 to go 48 wins, right where Vegas had us, right where we were a year ago. Jazz schedule to date ranks the league's hardest, according to BPI, just 16 of 39. Blah, blah, blah. All the same thing. It's not only the home road split, but you got it. It's all the things we've talked about. I thought it was interesting. The other teams he thought should get better are the Pelicans at 41, the Celtics, the Rockets, and then some of the lesser teams. If you look at 538 BPI, all the projection systems, it's pretty interesting right now. So it has us projected finishing fifth in the Western Conference with a pretty good margin of making the playoffs. I find myself on the bus after games, Bowler and I both found us doing the same thing, looking and saying, like, who's not making the playoffs? And obviously this can all change. But it has the Warriors at one, the Nuggets three games behind at two, tied with the Thunder for three. The Rockets at 51 wins at four, and the Jazz at 48 for five. Blazers at 46. Clippers all the way down to 43 for seven, and the Lakers 43, and the Spurs 43 for eight. So if you believe that, and we don't blink too many times, and we do what we're supposed to do, it's actually a pretty good margin by which you make the playoffs. Which is, and then also their playoff adjusted, how we would perform in the playoffs, actually I think has us going to the East, to the Western Conference Finals to play the Warriors, which would be impossible with our 4-5 seed. We'd have to open with the Rockets and then go to the Warriors. That's a little tough. The power index of by ESPN has Golden State 4, Denver 5, Utah 6. Has us tied with Oklahoma City as the third best team in the Western Conference. Maybe I'm not full of crap in everything I've told you all year. Hopefully you listened to this and are not and are having to be the guy. And if that's the case and you've listened to this, then I really, really feel for you. I really, really feel for you because that means you have taken all the same crap that I've taken and you don't get paid for it. So thank you. I admire you if you've been trumpeting the we'll be okay approach to things. If you've done that, let me change the narrative here. If you've done that, this is how I should have thought about the whole time, not selfishly, just about myself. Then you deserve greatness. You should really feel great about yourself because if you've actually had enough fortitude in your office when every other person around has been saying, what's wrong with the Jazz? And you're like, we're fine. The schedule's been brutal. It's totally sucked. They're going to be fine. If you've actually trumpeted that and believed it, then you're awesome. The simple rating system of Basketball Reference has the Nuggets at 1, Oklahoma City at 2, Warriors at 3, Spurs at 4, Jazz at 5. So, they project us to win 46 games. That's a little hairier, by the way, because Basketball Reference projects us to win 46 games and be the 8th seed, playing Denver in the first round. They don't have the Lakers making the playoffs at 42. That their scenario is, and they don't seem to have as wide a spread in their system, that Denver wins 54, the Warriors win 51, Oklahoma City wins 50, Spurs at 48, Clippers at 47, Blazers at 46, Rockets at 46, Jazz at 46. Clippers or Lakers all the way down to 42, Pelicans at 41. We got the Bucks tonight. They're great. They are the second best offensive team, third best defensive team, number one differential team, number one half court team. Like, you want to keep them out of transition because Giannis is so incredible in transition. They're the number one half court team in the NBA. They take the second most amount of threes. Giannis is amazing. Their offense is really simple. They come at you with early simple actions, kind of just beat you, make you suck in, have five guys because they have nobody around the basket. They're spaced with five guys out. They take a guy one-on-one, and then they pass out, and they take a three. Or they get all the way to the basket. Bledsoe's coming at you. Brogdon's taking advantage. Giannis is unguardable. I'll be really curious to see who the Jazz guard Giannis with. The natural matchup is Derek Favors if he starts, or do you do Jay Crowder? But you don't have Thabo Sefolosha, so if you start Crowder, do you have 48 minutes of power forward? The Brook Lopez, though, is playing center, and he's playing out almost the whole time, doing very little around the basket, but he can get inside just enough that if you go put Joe Ingles on him or something crazy and suddenly, I don't know why you do that, but slide people around in different manners, then he's big enough that he can go take advantage of a smaller guy. He's pretty good. So that's going to be super interesting to watch how the Jazz match up, and I'm not sure I have an answer for you on what to do. If you look at how Milwaukee's playing recently, it goes back to the same topic. I mean, I know I am just beating a drum of obnoxiousness here, but they lost to Toronto last time out, and then they've been on fire. Their offensive ratings, 126, 122, 118, 117, 119. But you look at who they played, Atlanta, Detroit, Brooklyn, New York, Miami. Against Boston, they were really good, 1-13. Beat the Pelicans by 8. Against the good teams they've played recently, they lost to Toronto by 7 just the other night on a back end of a back-to-back, both at home, though. They've been home. I wonder how this is. This is their 6th straight home game. They played the Knicks on Christmas, blew them out. Played Boston on December 21st. After they played Boston, they played Miami, New York, Milwaukee. New York, New York. I'll do that again. Miami, New York, Brooklyn, Detroit, Atlanta. Must be nice. They have not really, they played Indiana and lost by 16, beat Boston by 13, lost to Toronto by 7, beat Toronto by 5, beat lost to the Warriors by 10 of the good teams they've played in December. But otherwise, they've played really, really bad teams in December. They've played the Knicks 3 times. They've played the Pistons twice. They've played the Cavaliers twice. Actually, they've played the Pistons 3 times, the Cavaliers twice, the Knicks 3 times in December. So they've been playing a super soft schedule. Be interesting to see tonight. But this one's tough to guard. I mean, I almost wonder if you play zone, but then they just keep shooting threes. And we're not a great zone team yet. So, tough matchup. And they're great defensively. They're long. They drop. They just cover the rim. They're very analytically smart. They've gone from the worst analytical team in the league to the best. It's really incredible. Let me run through it quickly. This is where coaching matters. This is, again, I'm not that creative. I'm not that smart. I don't come up with a lot of different things. I opened the show today telling you how important it is about the Jazz shot selection, how great it is. We're actually making some shots, but what an advantage it gives us every night. Okay, these guys will probably have better shot selection than us. They're able to do it. But this is incredible. So look at just transformation here. Last year, they were 30th in the league in defensive rebounding. This year, they're first. Last year, they were 29th in the league in the amount they fouled defensively. This year, they're second. Last year, they were 25th in the amount of threes they take. This year, they're second. They're making the same percent amount. They're exactly the same, but they've gone from taking 27% of their shots as threes to 40%. But, of course, they're not going to the rim. Exact opposite. They're going to the rim at the third highest rate of any team in the league, exactly what they did a year ago. They just have gone from 29th, taking 35% of their shots as mid-range shots to 18%. And they're not, again, and they're not, they're making less of their mid-range shots. Their overall shooting, but their offense has gone from eighth to first just because of where, or shooting has gone from eighth to first because of where they shoot correctly. Their defensive systems, which were a disaster, have gone from allowing the most amount of shots at the rim to the least, to allowing the seventh most amount of corner threes to the least, to allowing the Do I have this backwards? I do. They are allowing the most corner threes of anyone in the league this year, and they are allowing the most amount of threes overall this year, but they are not allowing shots at the rim. That's interesting. I thought I had a mistake in my notes. But they have really transformed everything else about themselves. It's going to be interesting. Big game. Should be fun to see how it plays. Jazz and the Bucks tonight. Catch it. Listen to Ron and I. And tell your smart speaker to play Utah Jazz basketball. Activate the NBA skill and then tell your smart speaker to play Utah Jazz basketball. Have a great one.